Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
And then the officer got shot. He went down and he had a big old hole in his side. I thought he was going to die, dude.
Anchorage police officers exchanged gunfire with a man at a campground open to the homeless. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, July 21st. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, how inflation is impacting Alaskans' grocery bills.
I was really alarmed by that price difference. So I'm sorry, but my husband's not going to get his preferred ketchup today.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
Two Anchorage police officers exchanged gunfire late Wednesday with a man at an East Anchorage campground where hundreds of homeless people are camping, sending the man and one officer to a hospital. That's according to the Anchorage Police Department, which said both the officer and the man are expected to survive. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports on the shooting and the fear it caused at the campground.
James Keel has been staying at Centennial Campground in East Anchorage since the city waived fees and allowed homeless campers to pitch tents here about 3 weeks ago. He doesn't want to be here anymore.
I almost got shot yesterday.
It's raining and Keel is sitting under a tarp at a picnic bench. He says the night before he was sitting behind his tent when he heard a commotion on the other side. The next thing Keel knew, the man was waving a gun, firing shots in every direction. Keel says he heard about 10 shots as he ran away from the scene.
And then the officer got shot. He went down and he had a big old hole in his side. I thought he was going to die, dude.
Keel says he was scared for his life and for the lives of other campers.
So many people could have got hurt. It's a miracle that nobody else got shot.
In a written statement on Thursday, police say the officers had been patrolling the campground when they saw a pickup truck that had reportedly eluded officers earlier. Nearby, police say the officer saw a man they later identified as 32-year-old Ayese Gali Jr. walking to a minivan where they tried to talk to him. Gali ignored them, refused to get out of the minivan, and police say the officers tried to pull him out. That's when Gali pulled out a handgun and fired at the officers, police say. Police say both the officer and Gali were shot and are expected to survive. As per department policy, the officers involved in the shooting will not be identified until 3 days after the incident. A day after the incident, many of the 180 people staying at the campground were reeling. Advocates have recently raised alarms about what they say is a humanitarian crisis at the campground caused by inadequate supplies and a lack of oversight by Mayor Dave Bronson's administration. Bronson, in a recent interview with Alaska Public Media, said the campground is safer than illegal camps in city parks or the recently closed Sullivan Arena shelter. Advocates like Roger Branson with the Houseless Resource Advocacy Council disagree. He's been staying in a van at the campground most days since the city opened it to houseless residents. He says recently things have started to feel more dangerous. Branson says he worries that without serious improvements in management, more people could get hurt or worse. He's been volunteering, handing out donated supplies, and maintaining a communal area.
I'm just, you know, trying to make sure no one falls through the cracks and dies out here.
Northeast Community Council President George Martinez says concentrating homeless people in one area is unsafe.
It becomes a powder keg, and that powder keg lit off last night.
He says some are vulnerable or have health conditions that make it hard to sleep in tents.
I'm worried that the trauma that individuals have been experiencing is rippling because of this failed experiment.
He says the situation at Centennial is broken beyond repair, and he's demanding the city close the campground. The Bronson administration says it isn't planning to close the campground anytime soon. It says it will be open at least until September. Campers like James Keel say that they'll have to take things into their own hands. He says he'll be leaving as soon as he can and will sleep in his car.
I'd just go sit somewhere until I got asked to move, I guess.
He says the only thing he's waiting for is enough gas money. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
There's still no sign of a woman who went missing last week on the Stampede Trail near Healy, leaving behind a 2-year-old child found safe, locked in her car. Alaska State Trooper spokesperson Austin McDaniel says 69-year-old Mary Wilson, who was previously identified as the 2-year-old's grandmother, is not actually related to the child.
More of a family friend of the child. However, family members would describe Mary Wilson as the child's grandmother.
McDaniel says the lack of biological family connection does not factor into the case.
There was nothing out of the ordinary with Mary Wilson having the child with her. That there's nothing strange or suspicious about that.
McDaniel says the child, who troopers believe was locked in Wilson's car for about 2 days until found, is in the care of its mother. Wilson's car was located stuck at mile 6.8 of the Stampede Trail, and clothing believed to belong to her was found about a mile farther out the trail. A multi-party air and ground search was conducted in the area, after which McDaniel says troopers have remained in a reactive search mode.
What that means is essentially if new information, tips, clues, or evidence come into the Alaska State Troopers or other search and rescue partners, other law enforcement, then we'll be able to reevaluate and potentially deploy additional search and rescue assets to that area.
McDaniel says he has no information he can share about why Wilson drove out the Stampede Trail, and describes the area where her Ford sedan and clothing were found as a one-lane dirt trail. He says there's no evidence that Wilson was the victim of crime or an animal attack.
We've identified no evidence of any foul play. We believe she walked away from the vehicle and became lost from there.
McDaniel asks anyone with information that could help find Mary Wilson to contact state troopers in Fairbanks. Record inflation is boosting the cost of daily life nationwide. That's especially true in Alaska, where the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics measured consumer prices up more than 12% from a year ago. It's one of the highest jumps in the U.S., and as Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports, it's causing Alaskans to think twice about their spending habits.
Natasha Price is doing her weekly grocery shopping at a Cars in South Anchorage. Ketchup is on her list.
So my husband is very particular with his ketchup, being from Pittsburgh, so he wants Heinz. And it looks like, so this is where I really get into it these days.
She bends down and compares the price per ounce of a bottle of Heinz and a bottle of generic ketchup. The conclusion? Heinz is more than twice as expensive.
That's a huge difference. I was really alarmed by that price difference. So I'm sorry, but my husband's not going to get his preferred ketchup today.
This kind of calculus is new for Price. But with record inflation driving up the price of basics, it's her norm now. Price is a florist with a part-time marketing job. Her husband works for the state, and they have a 10-year-old son. She says her family's income has increased enough to keep costs covered, but she's still approaching spending with caution. As she makes her way through the aisles, Price checks the sale meat section for a deal on pork, no luck though, and says no to chicken breasts at $4.29 a pound.
These are things I no longer get. Fresh berries, I just don't get them. Or like grapes have gone up a lot too, and red grapes are my favorite fruit, and I just have to, it has to be like a special occasion for grapes. It's sort of sad.
An Alaska Public Media survey on inflation shows Price is not alone in her efforts to lower her grocery spending. Many Alaskans said they're paying more attention to sales, buying less meat and expensive produce, and stocking up on bulk items from Costco or Amazon. Respondents also said they're more cognizant of their driving habits amid rising gas prices, combining errands, cutting out road trips, and biking more often. According to federal data reported last week, the average cost of groceries in Anchorage and the Mat-Su is up more than 10% from a year ago. Energy prices are up more than 30%, largely driven by the spike in gasoline, which is up more than 60%.
Another one that has a big weight was housing, and that was up by 6.6%. And that is the highest. You have to go back to 1982 to find that kind of over-the-year increase.
Veteran state labor economist Neil Fried has watched inflation tick steadily upward this year, but he was taken aback by the June inflation numbers for the Anchorage area.
You know, the last numbers that came out in April were 7.5% compared to April of a year ago, and then boom, 12.4%. I mean, that's pretty eye-popping.
After a brief period of deflation toward the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, inflation has taken hold of the nation's economy. There are many reasons for this. Pandemic-related supply chain disruptions and labor shortages have forced up the price of goods. Demand for goods and energy is also bouncing back and driving up prices. Meanwhile, Fried says wages are going up nationwide, but not enough to match the rate of inflation. The federal inflation numbers don't include rural Alaska, and Fried says without the data, it's difficult to say whether inflation is even higher in rural areas where the cost of living has always been much higher. But rural respondents to our survey on inflation say brutal cost hikes are making it harder to afford basic necessities. Susan Tessier, who lives in Kotzebue, says despite uncertain salmon returns, she's trying to stock up on subsistence fish to lower her grocery bill. She says amid rumors that the town's next barge delivery would come with higher-priced gasoline and supplies, people tried to stock up while they could.
People are just kind of scrambling. I mean, when you go to the gas pump now, it's like there's a long line of people filling up drums of gas and at the store, it seems like people are buying extra, you know.
Back at the South Anchorage Cars, Natasha Price is finished checking out. She scans her receipt to make sure all the discounts went through.
Seven items, it was $28.22. So that's not too terrible.
Of course, but that doesn't count the time and energy spent scrutinizing each product to make sure it fit her budget. With help from Adeline Baxter in Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, amid low salmon runs, a Yukon River processor is selling vegetables instead of fish.
We had a lot of turnips, potatoes, tomatoes, lettuce.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Invasive plants and animals threaten Alaska's waters and can spread to new locations by hitching a ride. Anyone can help stop aquatic hitchhikers by remembering to clean boots, boats, and trailer to remove plants, animals, and mud, drain bilge, ballast, and buckets before leaving the area, and dry equipment before using it in a new body of water. Learn more at stopaquatichitchhikers.org. This message sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
The Alaska court system will open a new program this fall to help tenants and landlords avoid evictions. KUAC's Robin has more.
Called the Eviction Diversion Initiative, it would be advice and mediation that could help solve disputes over rental housing. Court spokesperson Rebecca Coford says the idea is to avoid the full procedure of a legal eviction.
And so the tenant gets to leave with dignity, the landlord gets the property back, or they come to an agreement on what needs to be changed and what they're going to do going forward.
The Alaska court system has received a grant from the National Center for State Courts to strengthen eviction diversion efforts and improve housing stability across the state. It could save both parties and the court system time, money, and emotional strain.
It doesn't leave the tenant with that record of an eviction. If they can find a different resolution where they can move out and everyone is content with the solution, it can be quicker. It just feels more human.
The court system will use the money to hire a dedicated staff person, most likely an attorney, but not necessarily, to implement an Alaska-specific model that could keep going year after year. Covert says that person could guide the tenant and the landlord through the steps that would have occurred in a court proceeding without actually going to court.
Because sometimes you need that extra person in the room, that extra intermediary to help resolve an issue.
The Alaska court system was selected through a competitive application process and is one of 12 court systems in the country to receive such a grant. The money for the national program was made possible through a $10 million Wells Fargo Foundation grant. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Following a massive chum salmon crash in western Alaska, the only fish processing plant on the Yukon River cannot process fish for the second year in a row. So, to try to stay afloat, KYUK's Olivia Eberts reports, it's instead turning to new business ventures, agriculture and lumber.
Jack Schulteis is the manager of Gwichwik Fisheries, the only salmon processor on the Yukon River. He's been at the helm of the fish plant for more than two decades, but this year the plant isn't processing any fish. Instead, it's planting and selling vegetables and milling lumber. Last summer, when Schulteis realized Gwichwik would not be able to operate as a fish plant, he built greenhouses instead. And this summer, he's building more.
We're adding four more greenhouses. So we'll have a total of eight.
In the greenhouses, Gwichwik is planting vegetables. They're selling them in the Gwichwik store and will soon begin selling them in other Yukon Village stores, too. He even plans to sell the vegetables to restaurants in Nome and Bethel.
We had a lot of turnips, potatoes, tomatoes, lettuce, radishes, spinach.
Schulteis also shipped in 35 chickens from Anchorage on a Linden cargo plane earlier this summer.
We get about 2 dozen eggs a day, and they just absolutely fly off the shelves.
Schulteis says they sell the eggs and veggies at Anchorage prices, which are much cheaper than local rural prices. Gwichwik also has another new venture this year, lumber. The big empty warehouses that once processed fish are now processing wood. Schulteis is purchasing spruce trees upriver from the communities of Anvik and Grayling. The money goes to the local communities, and local boaters haul the logs downriver. Schulteis has invested in mill supplies and is building a kiln to dry the wood. Remember, all this is happening in a fish processing plant. The plant now only provides a fraction of the jobs it used to. Through these new programs, Schulteis has been able to keep 15 of his regular summer employees. Previously, the plant provided about 750 jobs. Gwichwik's employment has crashed along with its chum runs. Last summer, Gwichwik was forced to stop selling salmon after the summer chum population on the Yukon River suddenly shrank to less than a tenth of its usual size. It was the lowest run ever. This summer, the population has ticked up to twice that, but it's still the second lowest run on record. Gwichwik's revenue shrank along with the runs. Schulteis said the plant typically raked in $10 to $15 million per season from selling fish. Last year, the greenhouses didn't turn a profit. He's hoping as the gardening picks up, it'll start to make more money. Throughout all these changes, Schulteis has been able to save another cross-section of workers, teenagers. Schulteis is particularly proud of the company's youth employment program. Each summer, a few dozen high school-aged kids from Amonok and neighboring villages travel by boat each morning to the fish plant. He says this kind of job training is great for their career and social development, and for their self-esteem. The teenagers plant and harvest the veggies in the greenhouses.
It's rewarding for me because you feel like you're accomplishing something with the next generation here.
Schulteis says although he's been able to provide some jobs and relief in the region over the past two summers, it's not much. But he says Gwichwik's new lumber and agriculture programs will never be able to provide the same amount of local jobs as fishing once did.
I don't think we would ever get to those employment levels.
In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.
The Coast Guard is issuing warnings about defective immersion suits sold recently in Alaska. KMXT's Dylan Samard found one store in Kodiak that is well aware of the problem.
Kodiak Marine Supply is a large department store on Kodiak's dockside, selling just about anything one might find on a fishing boat. Normally that would include survival suits, but this year has been different. Jordan Clay is a sales representative at Kodiak Marine Supply. She says that her store got a call from the Coast Guard in early July.
They did tell us to inspect and pull our suits off the shelf.
Kodiak Marine Supply stocks jumbo immersion suits, which are made by Servitech. The Coast Guard issued a warning on July 1st cautioning sailors and vendors to look carefully at immersion suits made by Servitech. After inspection, Kodiak Marine Supply pulled out their whole remaining inventory, about six suits in total.
Most of the boats prefer that suit over other suits.
The defect involves a particular patch of glue that is meant to adhere the suit's waterproof zipper to the neoprene shell of the suit. The defect could allow freezing seawater to enter the suit, rendering it unsafe. The Coast Guard is erring on the side of caution with these suits, especially because most have been manufactured very recently. Clay pulls a suit out of storage to show off the defect. A strange yellow crust is oozing out of the seams of the neoprene. The glue is hard to miss.
I don't know if that's quite what they're talking about, but... oh, there it is. These are brand new.
Kodiak Marine Supply has already sold between 20 and 30 of these suits. The Coast Guard requires fishermen to have survival suits on board. As soon as the defect became apparent on July 1st, Kodiak Marine Supply pulled the suits off of shelves. They're also offering refunds. But it's too late for some fishermen, who are already chasing the red salmon run in Bristol Bay and the waters around Kodiak Island.
A lot of guys are keeping their stuff on the boats just to for something. I mean, they can't have nothing.
It's unclear how Servitech is going to respond. Clay says she expects a refund to retailers. Servitech has not responded to requests for comment. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
An evacuation order for about 65 residents of a subdivision near the community of Anderson has been lifted. The evacuation order went into place June 28th because of the Clear Fire. Denali Borough Mayor Clay Walker says the fire destroyed about 30 structures, including one year-round residence. The structures burned also included 8 or 9 cabins and a variety of other buildings, including sheds, garages, and one shipping container that held about $100,000 of building materials. The fire burned nearly 113 square miles near Anderson, which is about 80 miles southwest of Fairbanks. As of Wednesday, the fire was 56% contained. Fire officials expect it will be fully contained within the next 10 days. Money from the federal infrastructure bill Congress passed last November will help the Alaska Energy Authority build out a corridor of electric vehicle fast chargers along the road system. The authority hopes it will make it easier for current and future electric vehicle owners to get around the state. Curtis Thayer is executive director of the state-owned corporation. He says Alaska is getting about $50 million of the total $2.5 billion reserved in the bill for states. And he says that's huge for the corporation's potential to expand the scope of its plan.
So what we thought was going to be a multi-year process to secure funding, the federal infrastructure bill literally gave us the money overnight.
The Energy Authority has already been building out a 9-charger corridor between Homer and Fairbanks. To date, funding for that project has come from a 2017 settlement with Volkswagen. Thayer says this money from the federal infrastructure bill will help expand the corridor beyond that group of 9, up to Delta Junction and over to Glen Allen and Tok.
And then when we look at the Marina Highway system, now we can do this in Kodiak and Ketchikan and Juneau and Sitka and Valdez.
Thayer says the money does not extend to chargers in rural Alaska, not yet anyway. He says future phases of the plan could focus on building out an electric vehicle system in those parts of the state. On a windy Saturday this month, 10 women gathered in the tundra for a Yupik dance circle organized by Dillingham resident Maria Dosal. KDLG's Catherine Moncure brings us this report.
Tish Olson stands next to a Bluetooth speaker on the ground. It plays Bamuya's version of Dana Vavramkin, a Yupik blessing song about tundra tea that became a viral dance video at the start of the pandemic. She talks through the movements to teach the women circled around her. They raise their arms above their heads and gently brush them down through the air.
It's about Ayuk. It's tundra tea or Labrador tea, and using Ayuk to bless hunters and gatherers before they go out on the land and the water.
These 10 women, along with their babies, young children, and handmade Yupik drums, have gathered on the tundra near Vortec for an afternoon of dancing. Maria Dosal, who's Ununuk, organized the Women's and Two-Spirit Dancing Circle. In the flyer for the event, she describes it as a way to celebrate culture, summer's bounty, and community. She brought her 1-year-old child, Hazel, with her to the tundra.
Since becoming a mother, I've been really feeling like I need to get in touch with my roots and my culture more. And so I've been just searching for a way to get outside and move my body. And this seemed like a way to get outside and dance on the tundra. I mean, what more can you ask for right now?
Neither Olson nor Dosal are Yupik, but Dosal uses a construction metaphor to describe the way Ununuk and Yupik peoples hold each other up.
Have you heard of the term sistering in construction, where there's beams that help hold each other up? I feel like the Yupik people here are really proud of their culture, and they help me as an Ununuk stand taller and more proud, and so they help sister me.
Olson, who's also Ununuk, grew up learning Yupik dances at the elementary school in Dillingham, and now teaches them herself at the middle high school. She says that dancing out here on the tundra is a different feeling than being in front of an audience.
I feel super relaxed. I usually get stressed out when you're doing an actual performance, but like being out here on the tundra, it was really, really nice. Like usually you're either busy with your kids and kind of a little bit stressed, have to get here and there, but being out here and being able to dance with other people out here on the land and on the tundra was so, like, relaxing, and I don't know, I got goosebumps while I was dancing, too.
Over the course of an hour, Olson and another woman lead several dances, including the Aguduk song, which honors the tundra's bounty, and Ilk Pipinayun, a song about the power of the mind and banishing bad thoughts. Tish learned both of these dances from community elder Sophie Woods. The kids explore nearby, playing and picking berries in front of a mountain backdrop. Sunshine sweeps across the tundra in waves, and the wind is strong enough to keep the bugs away. Being out here is rejuvenating, Dosal says.
I feel like nothing else in the world matters, and all that we can focus on is just the movements and the happiness from the endorphins that are flowing through our souls.
The afternoon ends with Choyaka Nawa, which means "Where's my drum?" in English, and was passed on to the group's leader from a local community member. Dosal says she wants this to be a recurring event and hopes that more Native people will join to dance and teach the group.
Okay, ready? So, 1, 2, 3. Choyaka Nawa.
In Dillingham, I'm Catherine Moncure.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Lex Trinan, Kavitha George, and Michael Finelli in Anchorage, Dan Bross and Robin in Fairbanks, Olivia Eberts in Bethel, Dylan Smart in Kodiak, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, and Catherine Moncure in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Everybody here is out of sight. They don't bark and they don't bite. They keep things loose, they keep things light. Everybody's dancing in the moonlight.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. You can talk to your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.